The S&P, the ASX stocks.
This is Motley Fool Money.
Welcome to Motley Fool Money, the podcast that is brought to you by Yanni and Laurel. And Yanni and Laurel. G'day, I'm Scott. I'm Scott Phillips, and with me, as you can hear, is Andrew Page. G'day, Andrew.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Pauls.
It's good to be with you guys. So today on the podcast, Telstra on the nose. We're both going to have to wear a bit of egg on the face for that one, Andrew. Mm-hmm. Also, Treasury Wine Estates, or is it the Treasury Wine Glut? Well, it depends who you believe. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Back to the well. Meyer is back in the news,
oh,
and
we're going to have to. Talking about Meyer again.
We're going to have to do Meyer.
Okay.
And hopefully that'll go for a very, very long time, because if we don't run out of time, you're going to have to get on your high horse. And we know that's not a good thing for anybody.
Always
but,
a good thing.
But we'll give it a go anyway. So, mate, let's kick it off. Telstra, again, this week comes out. Andy Penn, the CEO, says, yeah, so about that broadband business, not so great.
Yeah.
About that mobile business, not so great. And kind of the rest of the business is not so great. The shares are now at a 6 or 7 year low.
Almost, yeah. The lowest they've been since about 2010.
Mate, what is going on at Telstra?
And they were actually, it wasn't that, you don't have to go that far back till it was about 650 or so. Oh. So, you know, around about the time Andy sort of took over, things have just gone down south. And well, here's the interesting thing, right? So, in their latest update, they've said that they've added more customers. 15,000 more, in fact, in the third quarter than they did in the previous one, which is great. But just the trouble is that the average revenue per user, the ARPU, as we like to say in the trade, has dropped by about 3.6%. Prepaid revenues have also declined. So the margins are under pressure. And the margins are under pressure because it is a very cutthroat industry out there at the moment. There is all manner of competition, and not just the other big ones, the TPGs and the Optuses and the rest of it like that. There is 180 odd small other players that are in there as well.
Yep.
And in fact, it is, they have taken a lot of the new customers in recent times as well. So in order to compete, Telstra has had to slash prices. So they've kept market share. They've kept growing, in fact, their number of subscribers. They're just making less per person. And that. So what they actually said was they actually reconfirmed their guidance from the half year.
Yeah, right.
So they said, you know, back at the half year, we said we'd make between 27.6 and 29.5 in total income. Actually, we still think we're going to get around the middle of that.
Yep.
As for our EBITDA, it's that horrible acronym, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, or operating profit, more simply, we're still going to come within our. We said we'd be between 10.1, 10.6. We're going to be at the bottom end of that.
Okay.
But shares just took a massive dive.
So hang on. So they're kind of there or thereabouts. All the numbers are kind of within guidance, around
about
guidance.
Well, we've talked before about free cash flow,
yes,
which is really what, at the end of the day.
So that was the problem.
So free cash flow actually is going to come in, actually might actually beat their forecast.
Oh, so that's not the problem.
So this is the actual money that's left over after any necessary capital investments, all the money from your operating business. Yeah, it could be in excess of $4.7 billion. And that's the money that dividends are paid out of as well.
So where's the bad news, mate? Like, I take your point about the margins, I take your point about the prices, but they're going to deliver everything they said they were going to do.
Yeah,
what's the market freaked out about?
It is unambiguously bad news. And it's bad news because this is what these figures, these forecasts are for the full year. And
right,
it seems as though things have started to sort of deteriorate at a faster pace than many in the market were expecting in this third quarter. So if you roll that forward and then you have that trend in place for another full year, it may well be that, you know, things are actually down, and down by more than what many were expecting.
Yeah, as the F19 fiscal year 19 guidance that really spooked the market, right? They said, look, it's tough and it's probably not going to get any better anytime soon.
Well, and then frankly, FY20, FY21, you know, it's looking, as Buffett famously said, you don't buy a farm based on whether it's going to rain next year.
you like that one, don't you?
I really like
that's
that
a new one.
One
too from him.
I love it. He's used a lot of farm analogies, but that's just a lovely one.
Yes.
And just a very quick aside, because he's got a position in Apple, and someone was asking about how many iPhones they thought they would sell in the third quarter. I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
Not by, but, and again, it's very relevant here, and in fact to investing at large. It's not about what Telstra's margins are in the third quarter.
Right.
It's not about what they might even be in FY19.
And that's good for you. You bought the tangent back very, very nicely.
Did
for a random Apple story.
A little out of control.
I was going to ask Liam for a tangent sound at some point, so we can kind of, sound the klaxon when you're going off script. But you bought it back beautifully.
Brought it back.
That was good.
So...
All right, mate, so here's what I did. This morning, I got up very early.
Mm, you always get up early.
I do.
Crazy early.
Early Phil catches the worm.
Can I just say, if the sun isn't up, it's nighttime. that's not morning. You can't classify
it. I was up at 4 o'clock this morning. So anyway, that's not the story. Except that I got up this morning, and I got the bowls out, and the flour, and the beaters, and I made us up a nice bit of pie, because you and I are going to have to eat some very humble pie.
I've had enough, thank you. I'm full.
Yeah, tell me about it. So we got Telstra wrong, dude. And why? What did we get so badly wrong about Telstra?
This is going to sound so slimy, but I don't know if I have yet. So I recommended Telstra a lot of loss until you sell.
Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, I'm not going to draw okay. that. That one was definitely wrong. That was too early. It was only like a month and a half ago. We went back to the well.
Right.
And I think we even talked about it on the podcast, which was this idea of taking a very bearish outlook. And I actually said to the members, I fully expect the dividend to be cut. Mm. In fact, I'm going to assume that it just doesn't. It's only be cut, and then it's never going to grow. I'm going to assume that the business is stagnant, and it's going to stay that way forever.
Mm-hmm.
But I could still make a case for value. So again, it depends on what you're looking to do. If you're out there chasing a growth investment, well, it's not going to cut it for you. But if you're a retiree and you've got some money, you've got a choice between an ING account that might give you 2%. Or Telstra, that even with under a reduced dividend, people are now talking about 15 cents as the full year dividend.
Right.
Let's call it that. Let's say that's right. You're still looking at a yield with a 6
mm-hmm.
in front of it.
Plus franking credits.
Plus franking credits. No, so I kind of think if I can buy my shares for around about $3 and I can sell them for $3
you buy in 10 for 27 years
time, now. Give or take. I mean, honestly, if the difference between profit and...
Yeah, right.
Whether we're right or whether we're wrong is not whether you bought it at 310 or 280 or 290. I mean, that is just... It is beside the point.
Yep.
If this is really the basket case people think, then this is $1.80
in
10. That's when you get it wrong. Or if you're really, really right, then it's $4. So these are just little things on the side. But mm-hmm. my point being is that even if you do that, all you do is walk away with a high single digit income return.
Yeah.
For many people, if that's what you're targeting, that's actually a decent result. And for someone who runs an income service, I'm pretty happy with that. Now that the sliminess is out of the way.
now you've almost made it sound like you've made money so far.
Well, look, we are slippery in this industry, you know, so we like to...
You can't even talk about we here, pal.
I'm just...
Throw yourself under a bus, but I'd like to stand on the sidewalk if you don't mind.
Yeah, look, I think we'll
cut this bit out later too.
I think where we've gotten it wrong is it may be that pace of decline is more significant than anyone gave it credit for.
Yeah.
The magnitude and the pace.
Yeah. I'll put my hand up. We recommended it quite a while ago at ShareAdvisor, and I like and still like very much the mobile business. I think it's a really, really good business. It's a great business to own. Telstra has dominant market share. They're signing up customers. They are the absolute outright best network. They have the highest pricing. I think Telstra is a good business. It's mobile business, sorry, is a good business. What I didn't expect was that the broadband business would collapse so spectacularly quickly, and that's really what caught me by surprise. I think hammer time again, you know, you kind of got the broadband business going away with the NBN, mobile business growing. Those two trends, I'm pretty sure are still going to be true.
Mm.
I just didn't really allow for a fast enough decline in NBN. That's what caught me by surprise.
So they're building out a 5G network.
Yes.
And that could easily replace the NBN.
Right.
Let's not forget. Very or realistically.
At least for some people, not as an infrastructure project, but for some people who would say, well, I'll take the 5G phone rather than fixed broadband.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, it's going to be more than sufficient.
Right.
And it's really sort of between them and TPG at the moment, I suppose, on that front there. They are spending billions of dollars on that. And that is an asset that is potentially worth a lot of money.
Right.
Not just in and of itself, but of course in the income that it can generate. So here's the question. Let me flip it back to you. So knowing what you know today, you just arrived on the scene today.
Yes.
And this is, I guess, the nub of it. Would you recommend Telstra now?
Yeah, look, I think
for
I would.
For new money. So someone who hasn't is on the sideline thinking, should I buy it now?
Look, it's still a buy for us as ShareAdvisor. And I always reserve the right to change my mind at some point because, you know, more analysis, more research, more thinking, things change. I still, you know, the mobile strength that I saw that I still think is true, that still remains the case. And to some degree, I think the broadband challenges are kind of now priced in. Now, the market exists to make a fool of all of us,
mm-hmm.
lowercase f. And so to some degree, maybe at some point it turns out that I was still over-optimistic at 287.
Mm.
But I have to say the P is 9.5. If the mobile business is any sort of business, if the broadband business flattens at any point and starts to at least stabilize and potentially grow over time, I think Telstra is still poised to win in mobile. I think TPG will do very well as well. So that's also a buy for me. I like both of those. I don't think you have to choose between them.
No.
So I like Telstra at the current price. I think at a significantly higher price, particularly with the new bad news, we'd be downgrading it to hold. Mm. But for now, I think at 287, I think it's a buy, absolutely. How about you?
Look, I am the same. Again, you've got to be very clear on setting expectations. So what is your investment goal with this? Are you looking to buy a Ferrari next week? Telstra's not your investment. By the way, if you do have an investment that's going to get me a Ferrari next week, please let me know.
Sage_Timmy.
But it's definitely not that business. I've likened it in the write-up to a bond proxy. Yep. It is what you would hope a bond would do. Return capital pretty much intact with some income along the way. If that's your goal, I think it's absolutely, it deserves a part of a well-diversified portfolio.
There we go.
Motley Fool Money. Financial advice for real people, not trust fund hippies. Sign up for the newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM.
Speaking of well-diversified portfolios, as I awkwardly seek to something else, Treasury Wine Estates, the name that most people won't know, but I bet you they know the brands, Penfolds, Lindemans, Wynns, the winemaker extraordinaire, Australia and American winemaker. It was in the news over the last couple of days on the back of an alleged wine glut in China. For all the Treasury story, it was supposed to be about growth. It was supposed to be about China and the new world and all these great things. And it turns out there's more stock in China than maybe the market knew and maybe even the Treasury had told
us. This actually sounds familiar. Haven't we talked about this before?
Well, maybe.
Hasn't there been a glut? So remember there was a – this might actually be going – the memory starts to fade after 101 podcasts. But I'm pretty sure there was a point where we were actually talking about counterfeit wine in China.
Correct.
Where people were sort of putting the Penfolds brand on there, which you know, actually just keeping the bottles, filling them up again and putting the cork back in. So it's one of these things, whether it's infant formula, frankly, or wine or vitamins or any number of things, China is a phenomenally large market. And there is a very rapidly rising middle class. There is more and more money sloshing around. We are a tiny little minnow in the world. So if we can, if an Aussie company can start getting a bit of success there, it is to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And understandably, the market got quite excited with Treasury Wine. I mean, it went from, $13 a year ago up to $20 very recently.
Yeah.
Because this is a very, very real potential. And not just the potential, but actually they were executing, it seemed, at least for a while on that. And along that, when you sort of look at that chart over the last year, it's sort of, yes, that sounds very nice when you say $13 to $20, but, you know, it had some pretty big drops along the way, as is the market's want. You know it much better than me, but it seems to me as though this could be one of those things where there's absolutely some legitimate concern, but where probably people are overthinking things. Again, you're not buying the farm because you think it's going to rain next year. Is Treasury still going to be selling into China in 10 years' time? Is the volume going to be materially higher than it is today?
Mm.
If you are of that view, then probably nothing greatly has changed. Or am I oversimplifying it?
Mate, firstly, you're going to have to pay Uncle Warren a royalty if you keep using that line. That's twice so far in the podcast, and I would almost bet we'll hear it at least one more time. At some level, you're going to have to start paying for it. Mate, I think you're actually right. I think that's exactly the story. You know, to the extent there might be a wine glut, there's concerns about, you know, distributors having too much stock, or is some stock being caught in customs that can't be sold, inventories apparently are rising. Those things are all absolutely true, and I think that's, in the short term, something that the market is freaking out about, and I think unfairly, as you rightly point out. This is a system where, you know, as you say, 10 years from now, are there more Treasury products being consumed by more Chinese drinkers? Almost certainly. Mm. And in fact, the high price, high value wines, the Grangers, the Bin 707s, choose your poison. Those things are in huge, huge demand in China. They will continue to be the case. And Treasury's great change and the new kind of move for Treasury has been really focused on those premium wines. In fact, they're divesting themselves of the bulk volume wines.
That was a good
move. Focusing just on the premium stuff. Mm. And it makes sense, as you say, because the cost of making wines is incredibly high.
Mm.
You know, you've got the vines, you've either got to grow the vines yourself or pay someone else to do it. You've got the wine, you've got to leave it in barrels, then you bottle it, then you label it, then you leave it around for a while, then you sell it. Mm. Very capital intensive. Mm. And so if you're selling bottles for $3, $4, $5, $6 a bottle, that's a really tough business.
Yeah.
If you sell it for $1,000 a bottle, though, that changes the story really, really quickly. Yep. So if you're selling Grange and 707 and a whole lot of, you know, high-quality Wynns and Lindemans products, that's exactly what you want to do. And I think that's, to my mind at least, that's the opportunity. I think, look, the other problem for Treasury is, unfortunately, you know, the PE was pretty high, and so there was a lot expected from Treasury. And so to some degree, We talk about things being priced for perfection, which is a horrible cliche, and our industry is full of it, full of it in general, also full of cliches. And so, you know,
that's something else.
Well, yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah. So, but that's the story, right? So, I think to some degree, the market's overdoing it. Mm. That being said, it was priced as if nothing could go wrong, and so in the short term, you will see that. But I have to say, I like Treasury. It's a buy for us also at Share Advisor. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be a really good performer over the long term. If it takes a couple of years to shake off this funk, so be it. Mm. We're literally betting, at least on behalf of members, that in 10 years' time, this company will be worth a whole lot more than it is today. I think that's a pretty good bet.
Mm. Nice one.
Get more Motley Fool money advice at fool.com.au/MMM.
What other woes, what other tales of woe can we drag see, up that's from
why
the market?
That's why
week?
You're the master of the segue, because this has been a pretty ordinary one, hasn't it? We're going to have something good at the end. We'll think of something.
We'll find something positive to talk about.
We're finishing with your high horse. We're in all sorts of trouble here. This could be the pessimism episode, I think.
I've got a lovely little Penny Dreadful stock that I've been boring the pants off
you. We're not going to talk about that.
We are not going to talk about that. That was up 70% the other day.
We are not going to talk about that. All right, let's talk about Maya, though.
We're going to talk about that later.
We may have to talk about editing a little then. What are you saying? What goes to where may be very different, Andrew. Let me just put it that way. So Maya has been in the news again. Mm. Now, one of our guys, I'll give him a shout out, Andrew Leggett, who managed to make a little bit of money on Maya in the last couple of months. He managed to buy it at a very low price and sell it with a bit of a profit, which is nice for him.
Yeah.
The problem for anyone who's held Maya for a little bit longer than that, though, is it's very hard to make money in a falling stock. And Maya, again, has been downgraded by more analysts. People are now talking about the possibility of bankruptcy for the company because it might breach some debt covenants.
Yeah.
And that's not going to be pretty. At the same time, though, there's a PE mob sniffing around.
So what was interesting, particularly in the week, was that they came out and they gave some pretty ordinary guidance and the shares jumped on the news. I mean, it happens all the time.
We've talked about it before,
but
right?
It's very understandable. We often get questions from our members and from listeners going, can you explain why shares would go up on that news?
Yeah.
And, you know, the simple answer is it was just, well, the market was expecting something a lot worse.
Yeah.
As bad as that was, it wasn't as bad and hence the correction. And and hence Mr. Leggett's very well prosecuted thesis on, you know, we talk about it as, in fact, it's a bit of a cliche. It's picking pennies up in front of a steamroller. Mm-hmm. You know, it's money is there to be had, but if you get it wrong, your fingers are going to get squashed.
I think that's the and very small amounts of money, right? That's the pennies in front of a steamroller is you pick up one, then two, then three, then four, and maybe you collect 50 of them.
Mm.
But if you've got 50 cents and you still got run over by a steamroller, then you're still flat.
Yeah. So not much upside, a lot of downside. But if you can do that well, then there is money. I mean, you know, there's money to be made. Ben Graham actually kind of did this thing as well. Remember just buying really down and out companies on large scale and knowing that on average it would sort of, there'd be some reversion to the mean. A very good strategy. This is Warren Buffett's mentor, the father of value investing.
So yes, sir.
There is definitely credibility to that strategy, but not for everyone. Not for me, I don't think.
So Maya fell, sales fell 2.7% in the 13 weeks to April. Comp sales fell 3.1%. It might be going to trigger a debt covenant. A debt covenant, for those who don't necessarily know, is a company basically will borrow money and the bank will say, you can have this money as long as you meet certain conditions. Mm-hmm. But if you don't meet those conditions, then the debt becomes immediately due and payable.
Yep.
And it's almost certain that in those situations, companies can't find that cash or have to refinance at very onerous rates.
It's like if you can't repay your mortgage, the bank will come in and take your house.
Yeah, except it's kind of a different one, right? So it's like the bank saying, well, you can only have this mortgage as long as you and your partner both have jobs and as long as you drive a certain car and as long as your kids go to a certain school.
Right.
And if any of those things don't happen anymore, we're going to demand
even
you repay
it. Even if you are able to service the debt.
Right. We're going to make you repay it straight away because you've broken the deal. One of the conditions was that in this case, Maya has a certain amount of sales, certain amount of profit.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't happen, if they can, as you say, pay the debt, they're still in some trouble. Then Oaktree comes sniffing around. It might be saved from itself by a private equity buyout.
Why would the private equity guys be interested? I don't want to rehash the Maya story, but why is it for them a penny in front of a steamer? They buy it at a cheap enough price, they can put a bit of lipstick on this pig and then flip it, you know, a year down the track. Is that the play?
So if any of our listeners think of the name Oaktree and think it sounds like it might ring a bell, these were the guys who were very involved and made a lot of money on the Channel 9 deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in the day, there was a private equity mob that took Channel 9 private. Basically, that blew up. And Oaktree Capital, who invest in what they call distressed debt. In other words, companies that look like they're almost in trouble, Oaktree come and buy the debt. If it works out, they take over the company, refloat it, and they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Now, they did that with Nine.
Yeah.
The Maya story to them will probably sound a little bit similar.
Yeah.
So big exposure to consumer dollars, probably an under or badly managed company, depending on which your approach is. Mm-hmm. Maybe some upside here. And frankly, to your point, at some level, when you do trigger a debt covenant, it's kind of like one of those situations where the business isn't always as bad as the debt covenant might suggest. But when the bank's not prepared to lend him any more money, Oaktree can come along and say, well, we'll sort it out for you guys. We'll lend you money when they won't. We'll take our pound of flesh and an ownership stake for it. And then just maybe we'll manage to find a buyer for it in a couple of years' time and make out like bandits. Mm. That was the Channel 9 story. And I would absolutely bet my pound of your peanut that we will see Oaktree. If they do, we'll try exactly the same story again with Channel 9.
So I always have to end up on an actionable kind of thing. If you're looking at all of this from the sideline, does it tempt you in? You think, oh, maybe I could buy this and do okay. If the deal goes through, maybe there's a buck to be made.
Not even with your money.
No, I knew that was the answer. I'm sort of in this kind of in the same camp.
Real money advice from real people. Not just a couple of dicks with a Porsche. Get more at fool.com.au/MMM.
Liam, have we gone long enough to avoid the high horse yet? Oh, no.
Yes! Actually.
Oh, dear.
Actually, my friends.
I tried to save our listeners from that.
Not only is there time, I think there's a lot. If I'm looking at the clock, there's a good 10 minutes or so to our normal cutoff.
No, this is...
Settle in and let me paint you a picture.
Express episode. What have I done, Liam? What have I done?
Well, I guess I wanted to talk about... I think I touched on this briefly last week, but it was so much goodness. I wanted to bring it back again. I did a tweet last week on Cochlear.
Poor horse.
Cochlear is, for anyone knows, is one of the best companies on the stock exchange.
What does it do, Andrew?
They make bionic ears.
Bionic ears.
Bionic ears. Okay. They're hearing implants.
Yes.
And they are the best in the world.
Very cool.
Bar none.
Super cool technology. They invented the cochlear implant. So there's an implant inside your head.
Mm-hmm.
You often see those magnetic kind of plastic things that clip on the back of people's heads.
Yep.
Bad way to describe it. I can't think of a better way to describe it. I'm not medically inclined.
Yep.
But it actually allows the sound to be processed outside the body and then transmitted through the skin to an implant inside the ear, which then lets the brain effectively hear that signal, which is just really, really cool.
Man, you've got to get onto YouTube and search for, what is it, baby hears for first time.
If you're having a bad day, there's no matter what's happening in the world.
It'll bring a tear to your eye. Yeah. It is just, you see this the kid's face who is heard for the first time, and then the doctor loses it and the mum loses it. It's so special.
Yeah.
So it's one of these...
We're big sooks, really.
We are such softies. It's one of these companies that is not only like just made squillions of dollars over the years, but changes lives for the better. It really is one of these companies you can feel great about.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they touched $200 a share not long ago. And I think that's the first company on the... Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this the first company ever on the Australian Stock Exchange to hit $200 a share?
Best I know. I think you're exactly right.
You know, so it was noteworthy.
Andrew, ask me if I've recommended it for ShareAdvisor.
Did you recommend it for ShareAdvisor?
Actually, I did. Yeah. Thanks for asking.
Scott, ask me if I bought it at a ridiculously low price during the recall and then sold it.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
You didn't?
Yes, I did.
Oh, no.
And
it's still a buy for us at ShareAdvisor.
Here is the lesson. So I love a good spreadsheet, as you know.
Oh, God.
So I put it into
this is gonna make This is going to make great radio.
So carry.
Let me tell you about my spreadsheet.
So everyone carry the one.
Now, imagine cell B6.
Yeah,
imagine cell B6. There was a formula which was... Dear, oh dear.
So what was interesting was...
We're almost out of time, Andy.
What we always hear, and rightly so, is you will say,
is that the time?
What a long-term success story. $200 a share. You know, you could have bought this. In fact, when they had that product recall, which... I think we were both on the record as saying, like, what an opportunity, right? Like every manufacturer has product recalls from time to time. Not going to damage the company in any long-term kind of way. So one thing I did very smartly was back the truck up and, you know, buy hand over fist.
Well done. And being the long-term buy and hold shareholder you are, you'd still hold the shares.
I made a quick 30% and I sold. And I thought, what a genius am I? What a genius. Now, if I had done nothing but sat on my big fat... I would have made a lot more money. And in fact, I would have avoided a tax hit, would have continued to compound at wonderful rates, would have got a whole bunch of dividends along the way. But here's what's interesting. What people forget, when you look at these charts, you bring up 2008 to 2018,
yes.
And you see this sort of left to, you know, bottom left, top right type chart. But what I did on top of that was I actually calculated the drawdowns along the way. So this is the fall from top tick to bottom tick. as you go along that path. And what's interesting is at Sage underscore Simeon, you'll see the chart there. I don't tweet that often, so you only have to go back a little way to find it.
That's true.
It shows you just how gut-wrenching that ride was.
Right.
You will see at least four or five different 20% drawdowns, and not just the number of loss. So this is people sitting at this huge double digit loss along the way,
yep.
But the duration of it. In 2011, you suffered this huge fall, and it took 4 years. 4 years almost before you made your money back.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the share, you bought your shares for four long years. They sat in the red, brutally in the red.
Mm-hmm.
And what most people do, see, I was dumb in selling at a profit, but the other way of being dumb is to sell at a loss because
right.
of the loss.
Not the short term,
not because
exactly.
anything's changed.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to, again, sound very like an excuse, but I think there might be some parallels with Telstra in here. I think there's definitely some parallels with Treasury Wine Estate where
yeah.
people buy for the right reasons and mm-hmm. they sell for the wrong reasons. And I guess that is a very long run-up to my rant, which is this
idea. You mean, has it started yet?
This idea that to do well in the market, you need to A, do well immediately,
mm-hmm.
and B, it has to be significant.
Yeah.
When you look at, this is just one example out of millions. Cochlear is a nice one. But mm-hmm. you could throw a dart at any of the top performing stocks or even anything in the top 30% of performance.
Yep.
And the story is always the same. It never went straight up. It went up, it went down, it went way down, it went further down, it stayed down. And all of us get, almost all of us get shaken out at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it misses, and it's because of that you really miss the long-term opportunities. Another quick pivot on that. There was an article going around the interweb a couple of weeks ago. We were discussing it at the time. It was talking about the number of 10-baggers on the stock exchange.
Yes.
So a 10-bagger is something that's gone up tenfold.
Yes.
10x, as they like to say. And you think, wow, I buy something for $1 and I sell it for $10. That is some serious money, right? They're great.
Just for the record, dude, don't think I haven't noticed you've actually tried to put two high horses together here. It's been noted. Just so you know,
there's a segue here.
I will let you go a little bit, and then we'll have to wrap you up.
So this fund manager was making this point, and he said, actually, they're really common. If you go back 35 years,
how common, Andrew?
It turned out that one in seven stocks had 10 bagged.
That's pretty good.
Wow. Wait a sec. Does that mean if I buy a stock, I've got a 1 in 7 chance
That's right.
of having a 10 bag?
Yes.
And no, it doesn't mean that. There's a bit of probability theory in there that I'm not going to bore listeners with. But the point is actually they are out there.
Yeah.
And in fact, he actually made the point that actually there's a lot of 100 baggers out there mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
81 out of the 3,500 stocks tracked over a 35-year period.
Mm-hmm.
It's statistically significant, I guess is what you would say. And we thought,
especially if you own them.
And so our first reaction was, oh, that is interesting, actually. And then you have pause for thought.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just occurred to me, actually, if you had done nothing but buy the index over that period, you would have done better than a 10-bag.
Funny
Do you know how much it would have been?
Tell me.
58-fold. Wow. A 58 bag.
In 35 years.
The data I had was 37 or 38, okay. But roughly the same kind of period
Pretty
of time.
Pretty impressive.
And it is, so you kind of think,
right.
Wow, something went up tenfold. Well, if it happened over 35 years, that had a great return.
And let's stop there because that's a really important point to make, mm-hmm. right? Anything going up tenfold, people would fall over themselves to get.
Yeah.
And yet the way compounding works is that over 35 years, if it doesn't go up tenfold,
yes.
that's actually a bad result.
And this is why long-term investing is such a powerful thing and why compounding is such a powerful thing. If you right. want to work that out on a per-year basis, it's about 11% per year. Now, if you say to someone, hey, invest your money in India, you make 11% per year, I am not excited by that. What's the deal? But, yep. I mean, if you've got 30 years to retirement, it's a crap load. It is ridiculous. And imagine if you're adding regularly to that pot as well,
yeah.
how potent, how significant, how just stupendous that is. Can I put one more tangent in there because I'm me.
Mate, the stewards have called. And there is animal cruelty at play here. This horse has been flogged well and truly.
Keep going.
Liam Flanagan, you are absolutely excelling yourself. That is brilliant. Unrehearsed, unplanned, at least by me.
See, now Andrew. I can flog a dead horse. And thank you for that, because that's exactly what I'm going to do right now.
Oh, mate, come on.
To flog.
On.
Here's a little bugbear. Here's a rant. So when you
this is the rant.
This is the rant.
The last two were the rant.
This has all been the setup for this rant. And this rant is, I often you'll get, especially, I'm sorry, baby boomers that are listening, but you'll be like, someone who bought a property in 1959 and go, oh, it's gone up tenfold from here. I'm like, well, yeah, of course it bloody well has. It should have.
Oh, property. Good.
There we go.
Now we're back. Okay, good.
There we go.
All right. That almost wraps. No, that does wrap us up.
That
yeah,
does
yeah.
wrap it up.
Yeah. But before we go, don't forget, you can subscribe to the Triple M Motley Fool Money podcast through iTunes or your favorite Android podcast app. And if you do like what we're doing, please give us a fat 5-star rating. See, I can do it too, Andrew.
Fat with a PH, by the way.
No.
Okay.
No. Maybe the way you pronounce it, not the way I pronounce it, dude. A fat 5-star rating on iTunes. And please tell your friends. I'm sure they could use a little foolish straight talk too. That's it for this week's Motley Fool Money. But, Andrew, where can they go to hear a little bit more about us? At fool.com.au/MMM. Hey, it feels good, doesn't it?
It does feel good. I like it.
Until next week, I'm Scott Phillips.
I'm Andrew Page.
Fool on.
Fool on.
The Motley Fool and people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. General advice only. Please speak to your financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your situation. Subscribe to the free newsletter at fool.com.au/MMM. The Motley Fool operates under Financial Services License 400691.